What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Pod Maverick After Dark. I'm Kirk Henderson, joined by Josh Bow. We write over at Mavs Moneyball, or at least we're supposed to. neither one of us have done very much lately. Josh, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
At least
we're consistent with this, though. So yeah, pat on the back.
That's true. You're right. I just need to write. It's as simple as writing a post about the podcast, and I haven't even done that. That's how late. I don't know. I'm just really leaning into the summer bit with no EuroLeague basketball to cover there for us. At least there's just not a ton going on. I am it's 8:45 right now. I think when I'm done posting this, I'm gonna go to bed. I'm just wiped. Spent 2 days in the weekend at the pool and just being outside. I'm just not really. I just wasn't ready. And I this is such old people nonsense, but I've been having some feet problems because I bought a pair of shoes that I didn't really realize were affecting my gait. And now I'm in a better spot again, finally. But then I was working out harder, and now I'm just I'm ready to go to bed. That's kind of the extent of where I am right now. But that's good. That's okay, because, the Mavericks are still asleep and where they are, where the kind of the content we're getting right now, where the Mavs' latest social media post I saw was a really lovely Instagram feature of Derek Lively, just different photos from his summer. But there's just nothing. There's nothing. And then thank God last week they released the schedule, and now we have some things to talk about. And I found myself kind of cackling at the early Mavericks schedule. How should we go about talking about this? What do you think?
I think the main thing to talk about is probably schedule talk is hard. I know there's some people that are into it that want to break down every single game, and more power to them. It's just more I don't know what to say, because we can talk about what this game will be like, let's say on March 23rd or something, but who knows what those two teams will look like.
I think you kind of got to reassess every 20 games.
Yeah. And what's nice is the first 20 games for the Mavericks are, I'll be honest, I'm kind of shocked at how easy their first 20. It's almost like the NBA is throwing them a bone after what happened last season. It's kind of crazy.
It's really funny where you and I are. I think we've been pretty consistent in talking about how we are very skeptical as to what this team's ceiling could be. And oddly enough, I'm higher on their floor than you are, but that's neither here nor there. I think one thing we definitely both agree about is that given the contentious nature of the way the Western Conference is shaping up to be, that they have to get out to a good start. And this was before the schedule was launched. And for those of you who may, the beginnings of the seasons are really easy to forget. They just are. Jason Kidd has been head coach of the Dallas Mavericks since the start of the 21-22 season. Yes? That sounds correct to you?
Yes.
Okay. So regular season going back here.
2020. Yes, you're right. 2022 was his first 2021, 2022, because 2021 was the last.
So that first year, they actually got off to a pretty good start. By Christmas, the team, but then by they sort of fell back, and by Christmas, the team was 15-17. Okay, so that's your first 32 games right there by Christmas and that season. Then the season from hell following the Western Conference Finals trip, the Mavericks were 18-16 by Christmas. So just two games over 500, not too terribly different, but definitely an argument can be made that they were trending in the right direction. The funny part about that season was right after Christmas, right after the Luka 60-point game, the team absolutely fell apart. The 23-24 season, so the finals run, right? That's that finals run. They started off, and by Christmas that year, they were actually 18-12. They were playing really good basketball. And they really actually started out the season gangbusters. They lost, they only lost two of their first 10. Like, it was a fantastic start. It was the sort of season we had been, like, begging them for, just because the first 20 games are actually pretty informative about how your season goes. 24-25 season, by Christmas, the Mavericks were 19-11. Really, really good. Best, eight games over 500. And then they, even after losing on Christmas Day. And then from there, we know how the rest of that season went. And so I think this year, and this is just me talking for a real long time, I'm sorry, guys. No. I think this year it's another one where, despite the newness and the weirdness of the team, they really have to be playing good basketball for the first couple of months.
Absolutely. I mean, first five games are at home, which is like crazy. Like, going from preseason. Oh,
I didn't realize that. I was looking at the opponents more than the six games.
Yeah. The opponents are good too. And I mean, they play, so what? 1, 2, 3, 4. So five straight home games. Their first road game is Detroit, but then their second one's at Houston. So then you're going from Houston back home for the game after that. That's not a long flight. You know, that's like an hour and a half. That's not even an hour and a half. What is that? That's like 40 minutes flight from Houston back to Dallas. Yeah, it's crazy. Like, to go from preseason training camp and you don't have to get on a plane to, like, start your season. Like, you just get to sleep in your own bed before the season opener. And then you play four straight, they're going to be at home for like the first week of the season. Yeah. First game's the 22nd. And then their final game of that five game homestand open the season the 29th. And then you look at the opponents, San Antonio, Washington, Toronto, Oklahoma City, Indiana. Three of those teams didn't make the playoffs last season. They also didn't make the play-in. Obviously, Oklahoma City, Indiana, are the finals teams from this June. Oklahoma City, obviously, still awesome, but Indiana is going to be a mess without Tyrese Haliburton. They probably are going to be like a play-in team at best in the East. So that's four extremely winnable games at home. And Oklahoma City is obviously challenging, but the Mavericks have played them well over the last like 2 years.
The flip part there is that it's the second night of a back-to-back.
Yeah.
And, like, there's a little belt to ass going on there with that game. Like, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But then you look and like Detroit, okay, they're a good team, but they're not scary. And then Houston obviously is a good team. But then like New Orleans, Memphis, Washington, they play Phoenix, they play Portland, New Orleans again, Memphis, Miami. Like, all those games I just listed, they should win those games. Now Miami will be like a playoff team in the East, but they're not a scary team. The way I look at it is if they have an awesome, like, a team that's scary to me for the Mavericks is if they have an awesome offense. And if you don't have an awesome offense, even if you're a winning team, I think the Mavericks are going to match up pretty well with them, because that's just kind of how, even after the Luka trade, like, I remember last season, I was looking at like a five game stretch and the Orlando was in there, and I said they were going to beat Orlando, and someone replied, they're like, the Mavericks are like three games under 500 and Orlando is a playoff team. And I was like, Orlando can't score. I don't care how good their defense is. And the Mavericks just destroy teams that can't score. And the Mavericks ended up winning that game by like 9, 10, 11 points, I think, on the road. So, yeah, I mean, they should be 13-7 after these first 20 games. And it wouldn't shock me if they were 14-6 or 15-5. Yep. If they're like 10-10 or 11-9 or not 11-9, that'd be 11-9, or if they're like 9-11, or you know, if they're around 500 after these first 20 games, I honestly think the season, it's gonna sound silly, the season might be cooked, because that's
there's just not, I mean, this is where you
your
start
season.
So let's remember, Josh and I sort of started this with the cat of, you know, after the first 20 games or so, once other teams start to have injuries, you know, projecting out, you know, for games, you know, 21 through 40, 41 through 60, and then 60 through 82 is, I don't want to say it's a fool's errand, but like your predictions get a little stupider the more like the further out the basketball is, just because we know some things now. Those things are going, like elements of what we know now will definitely change by that point. Now, what Josh is starting to say is that they need to stack some wins in these first 20 games, because you get into some of what they have going a little later in the year. And there are some soft spots. There are some soft spots in the schedule. Of course there are. There always are. But then you just, like, you look at their late January into February and past the All-Star break. And right now, and that's like the real like doldrums of the basketball season. They're just like, there's just some parts where it's like, God, that sucks.
Right.
I mean, honestly, even from Thanksgiving on, there's kind of some really rough spots in the schedule. I mean, this back-to-back in Los Angeles after Thanksgiving, where you play the Lakers and the Clippers and then head out on the road and play one more against Denver, that's three games in four nights, is brutal. Like, I just, there's just elements of the schedule where all of a sudden I think the Mavericks could go from 13-7 to 13-11 in kind of a heartbeat. And there's just other stretches like this where I want to still say it's like, I'm feeling bullish enough, but it's, I mean, they play a lot of road games this final closing part of the season. I'm concerned when I look at it this way.
Yeah. I mean, that's why, that's what we're saying. If they don't get off to a good start here, the first 20 games were so easy, and then they're backloading all the road games, all the difficult stretches, presumably. And of course, like you made a good point, these first 20 games are not only maybe the easiest set of 20 games that they're playing this season. Granted, we don't know what teams are going to look like in 3 months. We can only talk about what we see right now. This is also presumably going to be the healthiest 20 games they play all season, right? Knock on wood that nothing happens in training camp, but you have to imagine if the Mavericks are going to be at their healthiest at any point this season, it's going to be in October and November, before February and March, when ankles start turning and all that stuff.
Then so, you just take advantage of the soft schedule as best you can. Now, I went over some of those seasons, and so of the various seasons that Kidd has had, two of the four, they've gotten off to rough starts. The other two, they've gotten off to pretty good starts. What's ironic is that the two where they got off to the best starts ended up being the worst seasons for the Mavericks. So it's like they, you know, so I don't want to like jinx it and say I just sort of wish that the whole season was taken a little more seriously. I can't until the Mavericks rework and reverbalize their own expectations. If they say they want to be a contender,
be a top three seed.
You have to be a top three seed. You have to be. That's what a contender is. You are one of the best six teams in the NBA, or one of the three best teams in your conference. And unfortunately, during this tenure, the Mavericks have not been that at any point. The highest they've gotten is what, the four seed?
They got
and that was with 2022, with Luka out, and they immediately lost home court advantage.
Yeah, they lost game one.
So, I mean, I know things are different now. I know it's a different paradigm, but it's just, we know now there's been one team in the past 35, 40 years that have won being outside of a top three seed. So, I don't want to beat a dead horse too much with it, but it's just, if they're serious about this level of commitment, this is what they need to be. Now, I have a hard time seeing them getting there, but that doesn't, with this kind of earlier schedule boost, you know, you can make an argument for it. Like, momentum, I think, in sports can't, like, it's the nerds will tell you it's not true, but it's like a team that starts to feel good about themselves can really do well. Like the 2006-2007 Dallas Mavericks started off their first year. I'm sorry, the year after they lost in the finals, they were 0-4 to start the year. And then they rattled off 52-4 stretch. Like they were absurd. So it's like you can just get things going the right way if the schedule breaks, if health is right. So I don't want to rain on the Mavericks parade. I certainly think that there is a path for them to be a pretty decent team. It's just these first 20 games are going to be pretty telling.
Yeah, I agree with you. They have to get through this stretch with a like. They have to bank the wins now. You said it. Now I'm almost like repeating myself and repeating myself. That's good. But yeah, they have to. And there's some nice like Oklahoma. They play Oklahoma City. They play Houston. They play the Clippers. They play Minnesota.
Good measuring stick games.
Yeah. And they play the Lakers. Of course, they play the Lakers. So there's that, because that's the thing I hate. Like, I'll be honest, like when they're playing, like they're playing Toronto, they're playing Washington. Like I almost don't even want to watch because it's nothing. It's almost like a scrimmage. Like those games are so pointless when the other team is so bad. So I really love, you know, I'm just glad that there are the measuring stick games because that's where we really learn about the team. And getting one 4 games in, you know, that'll be fun. That Oklahoma City game should be fun. I look forward to seeing it because that's the thing is I need to see what this team looks like because we just don't know. It's so hypothetical. Like I want to know.
What we got, and I did a quick count, so I could be wrong, but I think the Mavericks have 4 back-to-backs in the calendar year 2025. I'm sorry, 7 back-to-backs in calendar year 2025, which a lot of the game pairings are pretty reasonable. Winning on the second night of a back-to-back is usually a pretty strong indicator of a team that's like kind of ready for war. So that'll be kind of something to pay attention to, you know, ignoring the fact that I, you know, the first one of the season is Toronto and Oklahoma City. So if the Mavericks, it's tough to win up against an NBA champion, but you know, then they got like a little later in November, they got Memphis and Washington. It's a road back to back, but against two teams that are, in my view, just not going to be very good. So we'll sort of see what they have going there. I am getting, like, when talking about this, I'm getting pretty itchy for the actual basketball. Like this season opener against the Spurs is going to be, I don't take the Spurs seriously. Like they've been anointed 2 years in a row because everybody likes Wemby, and I don't think they're there yet. I would be
they got to earn it, right?
Yeah. So and beating the Mavericks would be one way to do that, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Be a fun game. Okay, let's take a quick break. Then we're going to come back, talk about a couple more things. I do have to remember some guys, but I actually need to pull up the stats. So we'll insert some ads, and then we will be right back. Thanks so much for listening, guys.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Thank you so much for hanging out with Josh and I. As the season ramps up, we'll be doing more content, you know, just kind of getting into a rhythm, doing this sort of thing. I will attempt to host my call-in shows where you guys can join. That'll happen one day, I swear. If you'd missed the show that I did with Dave Dufour last week, that was actually pretty fun. Dave's a pretty well-traveled.
I like that. I caught up.
You listen to that one?
Yeah.
It's a better conversation. I mean, you know, it's just talking with your friends. That's all it is. And just being recording. And he's just such a smart basketball guy. And it's like talking with him and some of these other guys, I really realize sometimes just like how out of my depth talking the strategy stuff I am. It was fun. I hope to have on Rob Mahoney sometime before the end of September. And you know, there's just a lot of people that I know out there. And so I actually need to, bring them on and talk to them. What else did I want to talk about before we actually kicked off into this? I have no idea. Really good podcasting, Kirk. Really good. I should write down my write down my notes here. So did you come prepared with a gentleman to talk about?
I did. I don't know how much I can talk about him because there's not a lot to say, but he is important. I do have like a funny anecdote about him.
See, you get more out of that than you think.
Okay. I'll go. I'm going to go with Eric Dampier.
Lovely. Center. What a good one.
Yeah. I mean, this one's easier for me because it's a little, I've got like a personal attachment to it because obviously really? He was, yeah, I mean, not super personal. Like, I don't know him. Like, nothing.
No, but it's like it matters. He matters enough to where you want to talk about him.
Yeah, I mean, he. I mean, obviously, he played on the 2006 Mavs, which that team was very formative for me because I was a junior in high school in 2000 when the Mavericks made the finals in 2006. So I guess I just finished my junior year. So that 2005-06 season was my junior year of high school. So you know. Like that's right when you're like really becoming a super fan and you
don't have anything else to do.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was big into the thing about Dampier, and it's really stupid, is do you remember the website Zanga?
Yes.
Where it was like the first personal blog thing. Yes. I don't know the first, but yeah, it was like
one of those. Yeah, that had
if a you were high school or junior high kid in 2005. You had a Zanga page where you wrote your emotional thoughts of your angsty teenage years. I had a Zanga post defending the Mavericks acquiring Eric Dampier and letting Steve Nash go to the Suns in free agency and explaining why that would be better for the Mavericks. So if people want to say that I'm really negative about the Mavs, just remember that that's my origin story.
That's fantastic.
Is that I defended the Eric Dampier move and said it's okay for Steve Nash to leave the team. That's how wide-eyed and bushy-tailed I was back then. I'm sure it got nuked off some server a long time because I tried to find it because I'm sure it would be
freaking way back machine. You'd have to know enough.
I know.
About, like what day you put it on.
Yeah,
it'd be hard.
Yeah, it'd be really hard. But yeah, I defended him. He was much maligned. I'm sure you know because you were very much, you know, you were a little bit older than me, so. There was plenty of internet hate for him, just general hate, sports talk show radio hate, because the Mavericks paid him a lot of money, and he was coming off a double-double season with the Warriors, and then he did not do that in Dallas. He got close. He was like a 9-8 guy, kind of on average in Dallas, maybe like a 7-8 guy. You know, he's a center and he shot like 49% from the field and he did not shoot jumpers, which just like he had no touch around the rim. And he was really, but he was big. And like the thing huge. That I remember about him is he represented the shift because the Mavericks, when Dirk really got off the ground, you know, from like, let's say that 2001 playoff team to 2005, they were a really fun team, but no one took them seriously because they could not play any defense. And I know some of that is Dirk, but, you know, they had Dirk and Nash. They didn't have a lot of good wing defenders as well. They didn't have a center. Dirk played four. You know, they went through Rafe LaFrance. They went through Danny Fortson.
Fortson never, like, was not a basketball player. He was, like, a professional, like he would just like kind of throw foul. People around on the court.
He had six fouls to give. That was his role. But they, you know, the Mavericks just kept going through centers like that. And so Dampier was like, all right, let's fix this. And as weird as it was, like he did spur on the change of the identity. Like the Mavericks went from that 2004-05 team. Actually, he was on that team, but like from 2003-04 to 2004-05 to 2005-06, they went from like a run and gun, lead the league in offense team to like a really balanced team that was still good at scoring, maybe not as good, but their defense was finally good enough. And like, there's a reason they went to the finals in 2006. Yeah. Like that team changed its identity. And I know we get Avery Johnson gets plenty of crap, but like that mattered. And that changed Dirk's philosophy of the game, which helped make him go to another level. I think that team had a different dimension of toughness than maybe some of those earlier teams, playoff teams that Dirk was on. And I don't know, like he kind of felt like the avatar of it. And of course, because of that, you know, he got criticized because he had a huge freaking contract. His contract was massive.
Yeah.
So Yeah, I remember him in that 06 run. He came off the bench, which is funny. Did you know he finished 20th in sixth man of the year?
I just clicked into that. That is an incredible thing I had no idea about.
I know. Because so what, and that also made it bad because another remember some guys, Dzagan Ajop, I might have mispronounced his first name, supplanted him kind of out of nowhere, and, and Dampier came off the bench. But that two-headed monster, like I remember Jop and Dampier guarding Tim Duncan in that game seven, and Duncan I still think had like almost 40 points, but like they got the stops in overtime. I remember Jop especially did. So
yeah.
Yeah, he wasn't good. Like he was not good, but he represented a Mavericks team that I'll never forget and I loved. And I think that 2006 team is the third, either the second or third best team in Mavericks history, right?
Yeah.
Like yeah. And he was a major part of it. So like I'm always gonna remember him at fondly.
Well, and you're looking at his stats here, and it's kind of like Bradley, who I talked about last week, is like some of these centers are much maligned because they weren't the defining center of the era. They weren't Shaquille O'Neal. That's it's like that's the real problem, is they get beaten up for who they weren't as opposed to sort of celebrated for who they were. And Damp was a limited player. I mean, the season before in Golden State is so funny. He scored 12 points and he grabbed 12 boards, and he never approached those numbers ever again.
Not even.
It was so he and in a sense he earned his contract. Yeah. He earned his contract, but he came to the Mavericks and he really a maligned guy too. I think everybody was pretty sick of him pretty quickly, but he played six full seasons. And he played a ton of games over those six seasons. That's actually what I'm pretty shocked at. He played 424 games in 6 years. And I think he might add an injury his first year. It's looking like in 2004-05 that I don't remember that caused him to miss 30 games. That's like a huge chunk of his missed time. Otherwise, he seemed to play just about. And then there was 30 games or so missed in his final year when he's 34 years old. But it's like the thing we know now about big men, and this applies to this day, is signing a big man at 28 years old to 30 years old, you have to be very sure, because that otherwise they start to age like a banana left on the countertop. It's just the nature of the sport, the mass guy running up and down, things are going to start to slip pretty quickly. And with Damp, that was sort of the case, but they kept putting him out there and he kept getting some relatively, he played minutes. It is, I guess I had forgotten, and this is just, where I was at my time in my life, but like I had forgotten that he was on the 2010-2011 Heat team. So yes, he goes from the Mavericks to the Heat and then watches the Mavericks finally bring it home after being part of two of the really, really big runs. I mean, that sucks. Sucks for him. But you know about his
son is awesome, right?
His son is incredible. I mean, if just Google Eric Dampier Jr., like there's just if you're not the son of a professional athlete, there's just no point in playing high level basketball.
That's hilarious. Ranked number three.
Yeah.
Holy shit. He's 6'10", 230.
Yes.
What?
Just like Damp, he is a man. He is a man already. Because if you go look at like Mississippi State, Eric Dampier, he looked how he did when he retired. There was no difference. I mean, his body changed a little bit, but his face was like he was a man. It's the same thing with his son, but I think his son's pretty like
I'm looking at a photo of his son standing next to him, and it's hilarious. Like
they know so much, and this is Dave and I talked a little bit about this last week. Like they know how to train athleticism now in a way that just didn't exist 20 years ago. Yeah. And also, it just makes you wonder.
Also good for Damp. He looks good. Mm-hmm. I've seen the picture of him and his son, and he looks, it's hard for big men to stay, for a lot of big men, like especially him, because he played so big. Not that he was out of shape. He was just muscular, big dude, and he's still he looks good for him. I hope.
Yeah,
that's awesome for him.
Well, I picked the guy without even telling. That's in the same kind of era.
Overlap guys from that era, because it's our fun era.
But it's also fun. Like the 2010 Mavericks Spurs Suns were really NBA defining.
Yeah,
just a lot of really fun teams. Cowboy in the chat says, Kirk, if you remember the Mississippi State and Arkansas ushered in the long, long shorts era. Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. And the Arkansas teams playing 48 minutes of hell defense while wearing long shorts. I could be overlapping my eras there, but there's this is why this segment's particularly good. I'm getting lots of requests, just so everybody knows. People are asking me to do Marquise Daniels. I don't think I can. I think I'm going to have to assign you Marquise Daniels for next week because I want to talk about him, but I think I'm a little fearful of not doing him justice when breaking down his short tenured Mavs era. I'm going to talk about Jerry Stackhouse, who was, if you remember, he came to the Dallas Mavericks at a really fascinating point in his career. He was part of the trade that sent Antoine Jameson to the Washington Wizards for Devin Harris and Jerry Stackhouse. And that reset the point guard situation with the Dallas Mavericks, because the year before, I think they had like Terry playing a way too much point guard, even though they're okay. They needed something, they needed something new. And Stackhouse was 30 years old. He had played with Michael Jordan. He was in the rookie. Like, if you read all this stuff, like all the awards next to his page, like he was early in his career. Like, he was obviously an all-star early. He was top four in rookie of the year, his rookie season, and a really talented rookie class. Like, you'll listen to this. Damon Stoudemire, who ended up winning, Arvydas Sabonis playing his rookie season at 31. Then Michael Finley and Stackhouse tied for fourth. This is the 95-96 MVP. He played. He was fifth, sixth man of the year in his third. In his third season, even though he got traded midway through it. Just a really like this. And he ended up, later on in his career, he ended up kind of being regularly in the six man conversation as he was a part of Dallas, which was why he was, such a key part of the Mavericks run there. I just remember watching Stackhouse, and he's the kind of guy, very similar, interestingly enough. He grew on me the same way Vince Carter grew on me as a Maverick, where when I first watched him play, I was like, I don't like this iso ball bullshit. I don't like, give me the ball, get out of the way. I'm going to get you a bucket. But as I've grown older, and as I remember those teams through kind of a rose-colored glasses era, Stack was so fucking awesome. I mean, he was exactly what that team needed and gave them an edge. And I firmly believe if the NBA wasn't sissies and hadn't – who did he get the flagrant foul called on? Was that Miami in game three where he got kind of ejected?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Shaq. I firmly believe that wuss call by the NBA officials and like –
it was when he shoved Shaq, right?
Yeah, he shoved Shaq, but it was a call, but it looked so much worse than it was because Shaq is enormous.
Yeah,
and it's like that just ended up changing part of that series. And I'm sure somebody's gonna come out of the woodwork and tell me I'm not remembering it correctly.
No, you're right. No, yeah, it suspension was crazy. It was just it was a hard foul. Maybe ejecting him in the game was fine, but then to actually like suspend him, it's not like he punched anyone.
That's exactly right. And that changed the tenor of that series in a way that just as important as Wade kind of relentlessly driving the basket without the, like he was the Mavs. Tough guy doesn't really do him justice, but he was kind of the last
part of their backbone.
Yes. Yeah. That's he was the backbone, kind of the soul of what kind of kept them going, because by 2006, he's 31 years old. He played a lot of basketball. I mean, he was at that point, he's past the midway point in his career. He played it 18 years in the NBA, but really his final few seasons where he's, 36, he plays a season in Miami, a season where he only plays, seven games with the Heat. I do not remember that at all. That was also the and then the lockout season in 2011, he plays 30 games with the Hawks, and then he plays 37 games with Brooklyn before kind of finally hanging it up. And, you know, where his time with the Mavericks was really his last hurrah. And I remember him fondly. Like, there's some really good stories. There's a Kirk Snyder story where he apparently just, like, Kirk Snyder, who's a former University of Nevada basketball player. I can't remember what NBA team he played on. This is going to bother me. I'm going to have to look this up just so I can actually see it. He played with a number of teams over the years, but at one point Kirk Snyder like challenged Stackhouse, and Stackhouse basically was like, meet me in the tunnel after the game, and apparently actually beat the hell out of him. Like, like, there's like a lot of just before the internet really started to take over, like, lore around Stackhouse that I find great. And you go watch highlights of the guy. He was a athletic monster early in his career, very powerful. And then he settles into this, you know, really interesting old man kind of at the YMCA game. And I like watching him play. Do you remember his free throws in particular?
I just know he got to the free throw line a fuck ton.
He had an extra low knee bend in his free throw is the thing that I remember. And I also remember him like kissing, but I could be misremembering that. I should have done a little more research on this, but whatever. That's the best part about sports memory, is you can just kind of add things and take things away that you don't want to remember.
Right. Well, I remember him the most for the Game 7 Spurs 2006. He made the Mavericks last two buckets in overtime, which basically sealed the game.
And they were so out of gas at that point.
Yes, they had nothing. Yeah, because they were long isolation two pointers. Like, because both teams were gassed. Not a lot of scoring happened in that overtime. So
and I can't believe we're approaching basically 20 years since that series, because for younger Mavericks fans, and let's not say like people that came on in the Luka era. I mean, even people that came on in, 2011, like when the Mavericks were making their run then, like that, yeah. That 2006, 2000, it was the 2007, it was the second round of the playoffs, 2006 against the Spurs. And for a long time, ESPN considered that the best basketball series of the 20th century, or 21st century.
It was an incredible series.
Just a real war.
Back and forth, classic games, Game 7 going into overtime, the road team winning. It was crazy.
So we got Brandon down here sharing stories because he's older than us and remembers stuff from college era. He says Stackhouse gave Florida State the blues when he played. He shut down, was it Bobby Sura and Charlie Ward? Charlie Ward, there's a remember some guys, a friggin' Heisman Trophy winner who decided to play basketball because the money was better.
Bobby Sura.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Oh my God.
Right. I love that. That's some good stuff, man. Well, anything else going on? Anything we should talk about?
Luka looks pretty good at Eurobasket.
Yeah, no, he does. Seeing him and a photo of him, Porzingis was nice. I think
of course one day he got hurt. Not hurt, well, hurt, but you know, banged up.
One day we're gonna have to properly remember that 2019-20 team, because Porzingis hurting his knee like that is just one of those what if moments, I think, in Mavericks history.
And Dwight Powell tearing his Achilles, which he was actually kind of a significant part of that team, as much That's as right. people didn't like that. But you're right, because that before KP got, well, it was a combo. He got ejected in that game one, mm-hmm. and then got hurt in game two, and it was like, man, Like, yeah, that's a definitely, that's a
well. And where I remember at the time, because we're watching that, you know, it's mid pandemic. I had a torn meniscus, and I remember thinking, you know, based off of my own recovery as a non 7 foot five person, that it's like, okay, you know, this is going to be hard, but he'll be fine. And the answer was he was not fine for almost 2 years.
Yeah, it took him a while.
Took him a real long time, just brutal. I do miss having like an active, like I was tweeting about this a little bit. Beyond the lack of Maverick involvement, because the Mavericks are an American first basketball team, for some reason. One of the things that I don't like about, like, when the United States wins the Olympics, they automatically qualify for the next Olympics. Next Olympics being 4 years away. That's Los Angeles. It's happened 2028. 2026, I'm pretty sure. So next summer, I think, is the World Cup again, the Basketball World Cup. The United States never cares about that unless they have to. And our various international viewers and listeners have told me over the years, and I think some of this is opinion, but I tend to value this opinion a great deal, that because America dominates the Olympics so much in the basketball sense, that a lot of weight by these other countries is placed upon the World Cup. And when the United States isn't forced to field a good team, then it's nothing for us to talk. Like, I like covering the summer basketball. I really like the international basketball. It's such a different flavor of stuff, and I wish we could talk about it.
It's kind of funny enough, like, when you get to see Team USA actually try, it's kind of like, wow, what if like the players cared about the All-Star game? Cause it's like, it's an All-Star team, like Team USA. And like when they're actually trying, and like, you get to see, wow, this is what it looks like when five of the eight best players in the world are actually like competing together, like to try to win a game instead of, you know, the All-Star game, which is just them kind of jogging.
Cause like that France, United States gold medal game. Like, if you haven't seen Court of Gold and you need background television to watch one day, put it on Netflix. It's unreal. Like Curry's game to seal the gold medal. Like, I still think the Americans were probably going to win, but Curry put them away in kind of a legendary fashion. It's like when the United States isn't that interested in these international competitions, it just sort of drives me nuts, because it's you get to watch how much these guys care. Like, watching how much Luka cares is cool. I like that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I can't think of anything else myself. I've not even done anything. Like, I've not gone to any movies in a while. I got the kids back in school, and everything's like getting my brain reset and sort of starting to think about how we're going to grind through this part of the regular season. I will say to anybody who likes our, and if you're listening at this point, you're a diehard supporter, I think I may have found a solution for us. That's if you are interested in supporting the show, I'll probably just start putting this in every show notes, it's just a link to something that, you know, YouTube, I think, takes as much as like 30-40%. And whereas this will allow Josh and I to split like 90%. So that would be, you know, we're never going to put stuff from behind a paywall. I don't think there's just no, but we, you know, we're being a little more honest about the support in this regard, just because some of the stuff we really get a haircut from it now and again. I don't know if I'm going to, I'll try to record with somebody else during the week. I got to do on my new little short video venture with this company, Offsides. I've got a couple of things I'm going to do that are sort of podcast adjacent. But other than that, you know, I don't really know what's coming to Mavs Moneyball. I'm not really making anybody do anything right now. There's just not, you know, nothing. We got a lot of Wings coverage, but even then they're kind of Wings bad. Are kind of sad too.
Yeah. I wrote about Anthony Davis's block rating in NBA 2K. That was funny.
What a weird, it's like some of the choices they make in these games. Top 10.
Yes, for sure.
Okay. Well, we won't keep anybody for very much longer. Thanks so much for hanging out. We'll be back next Monday. We're getting closer and closer to September. Only one more show in August. That'll probably be our worst one yet. Everybody tune into that one. This has been Kirk Henderson and Josh Bowe. Thanks so much for hanging out. We will talk to you guys later. Have a good one. Go Mavs.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station tomorrow on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.